1, 2, 3, 4. On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Ruhrink, Craig Mauger, and Lauren Gibbons. A little later, Jennifer Hensley from the Platform Republican Caucus will be joining us about their group and how they got going on a poll that essentially showed that the more you raise taxes, the less likely voters are going to support you as a lawmaker down the road, something that they handed out coincidentally during the road funding vote in the House this past week. Now, at what point do you have to fund the roads at a level where people actually notice? And we bring this up because folks still love to talk about, the old timers love to talk about, is where did the lottery money go, right? Nobody can actually believe that the lottery money goes to education, and yet it does. It's just not a lot and not as much as maybe it was advertised to be. So what happens here on this road funding debate if we only just do a little bit and then say bulk of the problem be solved maybe in 2021, but the folks don't really see the benefit?
I'm really excited because the roads will be fixed in 2021. I'll be 55. It's going to be a really good day, a really good year. No, in all seriousness, no. The problem is you're doing this so incrementally and you're stretching it out so long. People aren't going to see. Well, I think what, you know what I think Michigan wants to see? They want to see double the barrels next summer. They want to see activity going on that they can actually look to and say, yeah, we went through all this process, Proposal 1. The legislature worked on all this stuff and they actually fixed it. I'm not convinced that with the package that passed the House, that will happen, because it's too easy in a couple of years when things get tight to start shutting it back down, and it never gets actually to the $1.2 billion that they talked about it. I think
you're talking from a legislative level. Yes. When you start having to actually make the cuts that are a part of this package,
it'll be too easy for future lawmakers to say we can't do this, we can't do that. We're just going to ramp back down on the road stuff.
$1.2 billion, Mauger, and maybe it doesn't equal that. We're seeing some skepticism here from Mr. Murray.
It's fascinating to hear him call for more construction barrels. More congestion?
Is that? Well, I just really think unless the people see that, they're gonna think the same thing they do about lottery. I mean, my whole life I've heard of, anybody who's in their 40s or 50s are like, well, yeah, they're gonna solve this problem, they're gonna raise money for the roads. It's gonna be just like the lottery. You know, we passed that lottery that was gonna pay for schools, and that's the perception people got. I think it was a mistaken perception, but I think we're making all this noise that we're gonna fix the roads. And I don't think people are going to see it, and it's going to be like the same thing as a lottery.
This is kind of the conundrum that I think a lot of Republican lawmakers find themselves in. They say that they're hearing from voters in the summer that there are too many construction barrels out there already, and that all these constituents are upset about how congested the roads are, and it's too clogged up out there because of the construction that's going on. The Republican lawmakers also say that we don't have enough contractors in the state to do this work. We can't pour $1 billion in because we don't have the people to do this work. It's going to drive up prices. We're not going to get our money's worth. So what they choose to do is phase in this amount of money, 1.2 over 5 years, and that leads to just $400 million more next year, which some people would argue just isn't enough. If you go back to Rick Olson, former state representative's report from, I think, 2014, he said the state needs $2.1 billion right away to bring our roads up to snuff here. Rick Snyder himself, the governor's administration, believes that state trunk lines alone, the state road system, just the roads the state take care of, they need $1 billion alone. So this package is 1.2, 5 years from now, for everything. So you can see it falls short of what these people are calling for to really improve the roads significantly.
$1.2 billion 5 years from now, is it going to be really a $1.2 billion problem 5 years from now? Who's to say it's not a $1.6 billion problem in 5 years, Lauren?
Well, yeah, and experts have consistently said the sooner you do it, the better, because it only gets more expensive as roads continue to deteriorate. And I think going back to the point, just the point of the public perception, at the end of the day, when people think the roads are going to be fixed, it's going to be when they see their local roads fixed, like when you can drive down MLK and not hit like four pop potholes on the way. That doesn't include the state trunk line. And, you know, if it takes up to $1 billion to fix the state trunk lines alone, you know, average Joe Schmo from Lansing, Michigan isn't going to think that the roads are fixed unless the locals get something as well.
Well, and the locals are going to have to either do more of what they've done before, which is more bonding, more local millage proposals, because how long is it going to take them to get this money trickled down to them? And then what happens if part of the revenue sharing that they receive, what if that gets cut because the lawmakers had to cut money from the budget in order to pay for a roads package? So they're essentially giving the locals money into one pocket and then taking money out of their other pocket.
Which kind of gets back to the whole issue that it's going to be, been here at MERS for 20 years now. I think I've lived through two recessions and a mild recession. Every 5 or 6 years, the state is scraping the bottom of the barrel. And we're committing all this money in future general fund that we're going to need, and that may or may not be there. And, you know, I just think people are going to get frustrated, and it's going to be the same thing. We made all this noise for a year now. We're going to fix the roads. We're listening to you. And then if we pass something like this and it doesn't actually happen in the end, it's just going to be one more.
Because what lawmakers...
ghost of an issue that never got resolved.
And then that legislature can blame this legislature for kicking the can down the road, which I think we've seen multiple times in this town, haven't we? Mm-hmm. It's almost like a general pastime. And if you have to wait until years down the road in order to make these cuts, Snyder may not be in office by the time they have to make any of these cuts. Cotter won't be, that's for sure, unless he's in the Senate. He's not going to be here. All those third termers won't be here. Maybe some of the freshmen will still be around.
No, I don't think any of them. I don't think anyone who's in leadership will not still be here when the general fund shifting really has to start beginning to take place.
So that brings up the question then, what is the definition of fixing the roads? I mean, what does that mean? Does that mean that every road has to be fixed, or does that just mean that we have to meet that 90% standard that is out there that MDOT sets up, that 90% of the roads are in fair condition? Is that what that means?
I think you use the MDOT standard. You know, when this whole thing started under the Granholm administration, and she put together sort of that infrastructure needs commission, they spent meeting after meeting after meeting sort of looking at, well, how do you inventory it and what condition should the roads be in? I think that's the standard that you use. You want 90% of your roads in fair condition, good to fair condition, and then you keep maintaining the rest of it.
Lauren, when is the best time, do you think, to raise the gas tax? When would be the best time? When gas prices are low or when gas prices are high?
Well, if it was going to be done, I think it'd be an easier sell when gas is, you know, like I think I went past a 235 sign today. You know, it's a little bit easier for people to accept that when, you know, they've been in the past used to like $4 gas, even higher than that sometimes. So, you know, if you're putting one in, you might as well do it when the gas prices are low, as opposed to trying to make that sell when gas prices eventually will probably go back up.
And that's one of the hazards, I think, with the House package here, is if you wait too long to do the gas tax and it's only statutory, what happens when the gas tax actually kicks in, Craig, and now we're at $4 gas, and lawmakers at that time are like, whoa, wait a minute now, this gas tax increase is supposed to come into effect, and we're already getting raked too much at the pumps.
Well, a lot of the people who voted for the gas tax increase will then be out of office when the gas tax takes effect, so maybe that's the best time to increase gas when you're free and clear and out of the legislature. I don't know. I think for Republican lawmakers, it's really difficult to raise taxes on anything regardless of what the gas price is. I think a lot of these guys are looking at it, man, I don't want to vote for a 10-cent gas tax increase. Right. Maybe I can do 3.3. That's a pretty small amount. I guess I could go that far. But I don't think any of them are pining, no matter what the gas price is outside, to be the people who raise the gas tax 10 cents. I don't think any of them want to do that.
Especially when you got polling from this platform Republican caucus that was being turned around that shows that voters are less likely to support you if you have a 15-cent gas tax vote on your record. What was 70% of folks said they're less likely to vote for you? But then you take a look at when you get down to like 5-cent gas tax increase, voters are more accepting of that and are less likely to hold a grudge against you. So you got to look at that, I suppose.
But even now, if gas prices are low today, they're going to be high at some point in the near future, and people are still going to blame the legislature. They just increased the gas tax. Remember that? There has to be some connection between the price at the pump and what those guys did.
That brings us into a good segue here into our interview here with Jennifer Hensley from the Platform Republican Caucus. Who are these people? Where did they come from? Let's go ahead and start.
Well, we've been around about a year and a half now. We've been pretty formal up till now. We're just now in the process of filing to be a C4. We primarily started because, you know, we believe that there's too many labels in the Republican Party, and we want to focus on what the Republican Party is supposed to believe and not so much on, you know, what divisions we have within it. So what we really want to do is help educate and support people in what's in the platform, what we believe, and what we think, you know, how our citizens feel, and make sure our legislators are well aware of that. We know there's a lot of disconnects between that. So that was the whole purpose of getting the survey and now sharing it with our legislators. We want them to know how Michiganders feel.
From my understanding, you all came from Livingston County, is that right?
Well, that's where we started.
Okay.
And actually, some of our members were also from Wayne, and they've actually now moved to Jackson. But so we've got multiple representation across the counties. We've done presentations about our group and what we think we want, what we want trying to do across mostly southeastern Michigan, but also southwestern Michigan. And we're in the process of forming some chapters across the state.
Is this kind of seen as a bit of a unifying force among Tea Parties?
We don't consider ourselves Tea Party. We consider ourselves Platform Republicans, but we do consider ourselves unifying. We want to bring together Republicans. And yes, a lot of Tea Party people are Republicans. I like to consider them, you know, kind of disenfranchised Republicans, and they are part of our constituent base, but so are other Republicans. I'm on state committee. I'm part of my executive committee in my county, and I think that we need to come together and be a unifying base. But no, we don't consider ourselves Tea Party.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your background. You said you're on state committee.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been active in the party?
Since about 2009. I got involved, that 2008 election sort of had a lot of people involved. And, you know, while many people chose different routes to get involved, I joined my local Republican Party and got active, and within a year was asked to join on the executive committee and be involved there. And then I'm on my second term on the 8th district committee as well. I think it's very important that we be active in the party as opposed to stand around and complain about what we don't like about it. And, you know, Livingston is a pretty conservative county, so I feel right at home there. But, you know, we really want to share, you know, and encourage people to talk about the principles and not talk about the name calling.
Right. But when you hear Platform Republican, what does that mean to you?
Good question. We chose that because, very much because of the label perspective. You know, we're tired of, you know, people saying, what kind of Republican are you? Are you a Tea Party Republican, a conservative Republican, or whatever? Well, we believe we joined the Republican Party because we believe in the platform. And so that's why we chose the term Platform Republican, because we are supporting and endorsing the RNC platform as adopted in 2012. And that is what we are educating people on and asking our legislators and our party leaders to uphold.
As that relates to taxes, then what is the platform on taxes?
Well, the platform is very specific about that. You know, they talk about the fact that we are supposed to have limited government, and in order to have a limited government and to shrink the size of government, you cannot increase taxes. That just does not work. So that's why we are focusing so much on reprioritizing the spending. We think that Michigan already collects sufficient revenue. It has increased considerably since this governor took office. And, you know, we think that we should be reprioritizing even just future spending, future increases. If we were to do that, we could pay for the roads and a lot of other things if we were simply to take money that we expect to increase in the budget and put toward the roads.
Give me an example of a Platform Republican that you see in the legislature right now.
We have several that we support and we believe that are our Platform Republicans. From my county, both Representative Lana Tice and Hank Opel are part of our caucus, and they come to our meetings, they support us, and they ask our opinion about what we think about things that are coming up. So, of course, our local ones. There are also, you know, others across the state that we would consider to be a good Platform Republican. Senator Pat Kolbeck, for instance, is one because he very much represents what we stand for, as well as Chatfield and some of the others, Gary Glenn in the House.
The size of your group, what would you say? Are we talking 10, 15, 20?
Well, it depends on what you, how you define the group. I mean, our founding group is obviously fairly small from Livingston County, but as we've been doing outreach over the past year and a half, we're in the hundreds in terms of people who are strong supporters. We've got a mailing list that's probably in the thousands of people who signed up to get updates from us.
Oh, wow. Now, to do a poll and then to do all this costs a little bit of money. Where's your funding coming from?
Well, as I said, we have in the process of forming to become a C4, and as such, you know, we are a nonprofit. We don't disclose our funding sources.
Okay, but you are taking some money in, though, obviously.
Yes.
I mean, you're not paying for this out of your own pocket.
I have been up until now.
Is that right?
And as groups, but you know, obviously, we're taking the next step in our evolution, and it's a little more than I can personally fund.
Right. But I mean, because it seems to me you guys are looking at going forward to be more of a legislative force if you're going through the effort of doing polling and outreach like this?
I'm not sure I would call it legislative. You know,
okay.
Again, we're not into necessarily influencing the legislation as much as being, as you put it, the unifying force between our legislators and the members of our party and our grassroots.
Mm.
So we want to be that conduit and give them a voice. And so we don't want to be seen as lobbyists or, you know, because we're not. We're simply being that communication tool, the voice of the grassroots of the Republican Party.
How is this different from Americans for Prosperity? Is this more Republican Party focused, whereas they're more...
Well, I think so, because, you know, Americans for Prosperity was focused primarily on financial issues. We are focused on all aspects of the platform. So if there are other issues coming up that are part of the Republican platform, we would certainly focus on those, not just the financial ones. We also, you know, we are focused on the Michigan Republican Party, and not a national organization like Americans for Prosperity. So we are able to focus on very specific issues in Michigan and what's important to Michigan Republicans.
How do you guys see yourself getting involved in campaigns, primaries, those kind of things? Is that anything that your group you see getting involved in?
Actually, yes. When we had the state convention in February, we had a survey that we asked all the candidates for statewide office within the party to complete, and we had great success with that. Every candidate participated with us, and we are in the process of creating a similar survey for candidates for 2016. And what we intend to do, though, is not endorse. We intend to ask the questions and then make the information available so the voters can make up their own mind. We don't intend to endorse or support particular candidates, but rather just help provide the information for vetting as people go forward and try to understand who's running for office.
Didn't iCaucus try something like that?
They did. Actually, I was part of iCaucus.
You were? Okay.
I was, yes. I was one of the founding members in Michigan back in 2010.
Okay.
Yeah, we did, but what the difference there was, we as iCaucus, we did endorse.
Yeah, okay.
And very quickly, that went into too much partisan politics. And that was part of what... the demise of iCaucus. I mean, I think there's still somebody around. I occasionally get an email. But, we want to unify the party. We don't want to get into, you know, picking who's the most conservative or the most whatever. It's simply gathering the information, making it available, and encouraging them, once they have completed our questionnaire, you know, to then, you know, stand by their responses. So that if somebody says, I don't believe in taxes, and then they go into the legislature, we go back to them and say, you said you didn't, you know, support taxes. We elected you. Your constituents elected you because of that, and we expect you to uphold what you said when you were electioneering.
Now, taking a look at this survey here, there are some Republicans who voted, obviously, for this tax increase in the state House on Wednesday. What do you make of that, and I guess how would you address them in regards to their decision to support the taxing fee increases?
Our position is that you know, this is certainly a step in the right direction. It's certainly less than what the Senate plan included. But we are disappointed that there is a revenue increase in it. You know, we feel that this, our poll very clearly shows that people want road funding to be done out of, by reprioritizing current revenue and not new taxes. So we are a little disappointed in that. We do understand that, you know, individual legislators have to, you know, make certain decisions based on what their constituents want and, you know, what else is going on. So I'm not going to speak to what an individual legislator, you know, how they voted, but rather encourage them to continue to, you know, focus more on the reprioritization rather than tax increases.
So if a Republican voted for the fee increases or the tax increases, you're not going to come after them with a verbal hammer and say, bad, bad, bad.
I don't think that's constructive.
Okay.
You know, we want to continue to provide them with the information to let them know what the people of Michigan think. You know, and you know, privately we'll certainly, you know, encourage them to listen to the constituents, but it's not constructive to publicly do that. And we don't have any intention of that. And that's, you know, really, again, we're trying to unify, not divide.
Cool. Hey, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks for the crew here and Jennifer Hensley and Scott Hagerstrom for sitting down with us and talking about roads again. Thank you very much for the Willie Nelson suggestion here for the podcast.
Oh, no problem. I mean, it seems like we're going to be talking about roads again for a long time. So.
And again.
And you know, the good thing is that there's no shortage of road songs, too. So when we get tired of hearing this one,
King of the Road.
Hey, what's your recommendation?
I'm amazed by all of these. I think we should do some type of compilation.
We just do a whole. We could do a soundtrack. How about that?
But only 30 seconds each to fit within copyright law.
Thank you, Madam Attorney. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Until next time, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.